start your day the Torah way, Rabbi David Stroh.
Good morning, everyone. Parshas Ki Tzetze. The Torah starts off in Parshas Ki Tzetze with the mitzvah of Yefas Toya. The person goes to battle and he sees a Yefas Toya, he sees a Scotia lady, and he takes a fancy to her and he wants to marry her. The Torah tells us exactly what he has to do. First, he has to make her change all her clothes, make her cry for a month, make her be upset, make her be sad, and then after a month, if he still wants her, then he can marry her. That's the parasha of Yefas Toya. A couple of questions I want to ask. First of all, the parasha starts, it says, he sees this shivyo, he sees this lady amongst the shivyois, amongst the captives. She's an eishes Yefas Toya, she's a beautiful lady, v'choshak tovo, and he has a desire for her. So the Torah uses the loshen of the choshak, of the cheshek, the strong desire which he has for this lady. Then the Torah carries on and says what he has to do. He has to bring her home. He has to make sure she cuts all her hair off, and she has to do something to her nails, and she has to change her clothes. Rashi says that the goyim would make sure that their wives and the ladies would wear fancy clothes when they went to battle in order to entice the enemy and to distract the enemy, rather. And so she would have to take off these clothes, and she'll sit in his house, and she'd wait there for 30 days. So she should cry for her parents for 30 days. And then after that, then he can marry her, and she can be his wife. Carries on the pasuk, and it will be, if he's got no desire for her, then you should send her out, and he's got a special dinner about how he has to send her out. So here the Torah, so when it says about he doesn't want her, Torah doesn't use the same loshen. Don't say v'hayam lo choshak toba. Don't say he doesn't have a desire for her. It says v'hayam lo chafatz toba. Changes the loshen. The first time he uses the loshen of cheshek, he has a desire for her. And then it says v'hayam lo chafatz, so he doesn't want her. He uses the loshen of chafetz. He's got no want. He's got no want for this lady. Why does the Torah change the expression which it started off with, from cheshek to chafetz? Another question is, why exactly does he have to do all these things? Why does he have to make her look ugly, etc., etc.? If the Torah doesn't want him to marry her, then don't go through in the first place. Why, what's the Torah trying to achieve by letting him marry her, but making him be put off the way she looks? So the Malbim explains that there's a difference between the loshen of cheshek, desire, and the loshen of chifetz, of want. And he says that the loshen of cheshek is an extremely strong desire. He says that the Gemara says, "Sama cheshek ein lo inayim, cheshek's got no eyes." It's an extremely strong, very strong desire, which a person doesn't really know exactly what he wants. He's just totally taken back. He's totally led by his desire to whatever's leading him there. And he's got no control over himself. But it's without any thought, without any deep understanding of exactly what he wants. That's the Lashon of Cheshek, extremely strong desire. Whereas Chafetz, says the Malbim, is a more lower tone, where a person's thought it out, he knows exactly what he's getting, and still he wants it. That's the Lashon of Chafetz. It's not like a burning desire for something, but it's a person wants something because he's understood what he's getting, he knows what's in front of him, and then he wants it. That's the Lashon of Chafetz. So we can say with this, that at first this person, he sees this shivya, he sees this lady here, and she's dressed all fancy, and it's a time of battle, and the Yetzer Hara is very strong. He's got this cheshek, he's got this burning desire, but he doesn't understand what it is. And he's not thought it out properly, he just wants her. He just wants her, and no one's going to be able to stop him, because his desire is so strong. Ein lo einayim, it's got no understanding, it's got no eyes, it's just, I have to get this lady, full stop. That's the Lashon of cheshek. Whereas the Lashon of Chafetz says, according to the Malbim, once he's already waited a month, and he's seen her cry, and he's seen that she's not wearing such fancy clothes anymore, and she's cut her hair, and she's not looking as enticing as she was at the beginning, then it's only a Chafetz, and it's just, do I want her or not? Right? Is there something here which I can really gain from? Is there something here for me to take? Or is it just a waste of time? Was it just all a bluff in the beginning? Nothing which I really wanted. And that's why the Torah says, "V'hoyim lo chafatz taba." In the end, he's not even going to want. Not only he's not going to have a cheshek, but he's not going to have a desire, this burning desire anymore. But he's not going to have. He's not even going to have a want for her, right? Because once he's seen what's happened to her, once he's seen that she's just another shiksa and she's another you know, nothing there, then he's not going to want her, he's not going to have any want, any desire for this lady. And as Rashi explains, as Rashi says straight away, Vahoya is a loshen, Vahoyim lo chafatzdaba, he's soif cholis noisa, in the end, he's definitely going to hate her. There's not going to be any desire for this lady. So we see from here how a person, many times, throughout our lives, we're faced with many challenges and we're faced with many desires. And the Yetzer Hara throws many things at us constantly on a daily, it's a daily battle. But many times, the person will just think properly, what is he getting here? He'll realize it's just a cheshek, it's just a strong desire, a burning desire, which if he internalizes what exactly he's getting, and what he's going to gain from this, and what he's going to lose from taking it, then he'll realize that he's not going to have any chifetz for it as well. It's just the Yetzer Hara making some sort of dimion here, some sort of bluff, some sort of blown out gain that he can get here, but there's really nothing for him to get. In the end, he'll not have any chifetz for it. That's the keach of the Yetzer Hara. The keach of the Yetzer Hara is to blow things up and make them look very attractive. As Yaakov, when he had his battle with the Malach Shel Esav, which was the Yetzer Hara, it says the Yaakov asked the Malach, what's your name? And the Malach said, Loma zeh tisha lishmi. Why do you ask my name? And the Mefarshim explained, Loma zeh tisha lishmi, because I don't have a name. I'm just a piece of bluff. Like the Ponovitch Rav would say, there's a person trying to get through a door. And there's a massive balloon blocking the door. Can't get through. But he only has to be a bit clever to know. They just take a little pin, poke it in, and then he can walk through no problem. Because that's the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara just looks like a massive balloon blocking the doorway. So much here to gain. But really, there's nothing there. It's just a cheshek which can be taken away nice and easy. Like Yaakov, when he sent his presents to Esau. Yaakov sent the presents to Esau. So it says he sent him lots of animals. And Yaakov didn't want to send him too much. So he said he made big gaps. Sim revach bein eda la eda. He made big gaps in between each group of animals. 10 animals, then a gap, or however many animals, and then another gap. Every group had a gap in between it. And Rashi says, why did he do that? In order to make Esav excited about the bigness and about the greatness and the vastness of the present which he was sending him, right? So Yaakov was trying to karg. He didn't want to give him too much. Not supposed to give presents to a rosh, not supposed to give presents to a goy. He had to karg as much as he could. So instead of giving him a massive present, he gave him small presents but made massive gaps. So Esav will get all excited. He'll think he's getting a massive present. Because that's the way of the Yetzer Hara. He just looks at the picture and he says, wow, this is amazing. And that's, you know, that entices him. That's why Yaakov left all these gaps in between. And constantly we're faced with that, whether we're faced with all these excitements which the Yetzer brings. Like a child, you give a child's very excited for a treat, and as soon as you give him the child a treat, he's already wanting his next treat. He's already, whilst he's gobbling it up and totally forgotten about it, he's already asking for his next treat because the excitement is so strong beforehand. But once the person's got it, he's already on to the next thing. Because it wasn't a proper chifetz. It wasn't that he wanted it. It was a cheshek, an extremely strong desire for it. Like I saw, there was recently an advert. I was going through the advertiser. I always look at the for sale, see if there's anything good to buy. So someone put an advert in last week for a pet rat. I hope it's not on here. Right, who would want a pet rat? Anyway, so the advert, I think it says something like, for sale, pet rat. These are much better or much more friendly than hamsters. So if you had a hamster till now, you know, you get a rat, it's much more friendly and much more geschmack. But not only that, right at the end, the reason we're selling it is because the children don't want it anymore. Right? So they obviously had this strong cheshek in the beginning, you know, we have to get a rat, we have to get a rat, mummy, right? And then after a few days or after a few weeks, I don't say how long they had it for. But after a few days, it just becomes they don't even have a chifetz for it anymore. They're not interested, right? That's this strong cheshek which a person gets for many things. The Gemara says that the Yetzer Hara has 7 names. The Yetzer Hara is called Ra, he's bad, Orel, he's a Tomei, he's impure, he's Soine, he's an enemy, he's a Michshol, he's an Even, and he's Sifoni, he's a hidden Yetzer Hara. Now, we know he's hidden, right? So we know there's another Gemara which says, if the Yetzer Hara comes to attack you, in Poga Bechom and Nuvel Zeh, if this dirty creature comes to attack you, then it says, Mashcheu lebeis HaMedrash, you should take the Yetzer Hara to the Beis HaMedrash. Im Evenhu, if he's a stone, Nemuach, he'll just platz, he'll just explode. If he's whatever he is, the Beis HaMedrash will sort him out. That's what the Gemara says in Sukkah and a few other places. So the question is, if the Yetzer Hara is also called the Menuvel, he's dirty, then why in the list of the seven names of the Yetzer Hara, I just list them out, Ra, Orel, Tomei, Soine, Michal, Evan, and Sveni, why does it not list out also Menuvel? There should be eight names. He's a Menuvel, he's a dirty creature. Why does the Gemara not list out also the name Menuvel in the list of the names of the Yetzer Hara? And the answer could be that the reason he's Menuvel, the reason he's dirty, is because he tricks a person in making things look big, making things which are really nothing, right? There's no benefit from doing this Avera, besides for a few seconds, there's no benefit. If he makes it look big and attractive and exciting, and let's go for it, let's do it, right? No, don't leave this one. So it's dirty that it tricks a person into making things look big, which are really nothing, right? And when you take the Yetzer to the base of Medrash and you teach him B'av Torah, then a person will realize this is Geshmak, and that thing was nothing. That was nothing. So it's not pshat that the Yetzer disappears and the Yetzer runs away from the base of Medrash. Pshat is the Yetzer person realizes that what he thought was something was really nothing. So it's not even a name. It's not even a something. It's not even a manuvel. It's just gone. It was never there. No, it's not just gone. It was never there lechatchila. This manuvel was never there lechatchila. Therefore, it's not even worthy of a name. And it's not worthy of having one of the seven names of the Yetzer Hara. That's why the Gemara doesn't list this name of Menuvel. They bring down that Rav Sholem Shadron, when he was visiting England, he was told of the various places he should go to. I'm sure some good addresses. But one of the places he was told he has to visit is a museum, which I imagine this museum was Madame Tussauds in London. It says it has over 150 models of people there, wax models of people. And he thought, lechatchila, you know, what should I go to a museum for? So no, you have to go. So he decided he's going to go because he's got to give lots of droshes, and it sounds like an interesting place. Maybe he'll be able to, you know, learn something from going to this museum which he can speak to people about. He says, in the queue, you know what the queue is like in Madame Tussauds, if you see the queue goes around the block, don't know how many times. Right, so he's standing in the queue and he's watching the people go in. And there's two security guards right at the front, two British policemen. In those days they probably had their bob hats on, etc., etc. And they're standing at the entrance, and everyone goes, as they walk in, everyone goes up to them and says good morning, or whatever it was. And then they smile, and I look at them for a minute, a few seconds, and they walk off. Man is wondering, what's this attraction here? Why is everyone like smiling at them? Anyway, it comes to his turn, he says good morning, and then he realizes that they're not actually policemen, they're actually just models, just like all the other models. And they might look very real, but they're not real. And you know, he also gives the same smile after a few seconds for realizing that what he thought was actually a policeman was just a piece of wax, was just nothing. Right? And then his lesson, which he brought out from there, is that's the Yetzer Hara. Right? It might look like a proper thing. It might look like anything else. It might look real. It might look so real that you'd actually say good morning to it. But no, in the end, it's just a piece of wax. It's just a piece of nothing. And after a few seconds, you can just smile and say, hey, bye, you're nothing, right? So that's the kirch of the Yetzer Hara, which a person has to realize. He puts into a person a cheshek, he puts this strong desire, which is really nothing. And a person has to take that and realize that there's nothing to it. The Gemara says that a person should make a bracha after eating. Birchas HaMozon says, v'achalta v'savota v'zechir min ha-teira, to make birchas HaMozon after a meal. It's the only bracha, one of the only brachas which I'm in Atera. And the Gemara says, how do I know I should make a bracha before I eat? If you make a bracha, how do I know to make a bracha beforehand? Right? So the Gemara says you make a kavah chayma. If you make a bracha after you eat, when you're full, keshehu sova mevarech, when he's full, he makes a bracha. Keshehu roa v'leikolshkin, so kavah chayma, when he's hungry, and he's about to eat kavah chayma, then he should make a bracha. That's one Gemara. And there's another Gemara which says about Birkas HaTeira, that a person has to make a bracha before he learns Torah. Ki Shem Hashem Ekra, Hovo Goydele Lekeinu, when you're about to say the name of Hashem, Limud Torah, then Hovo Goydele Lekeinu, you should make a bracha, and you should mevarch. That's the bracha before learning Torah. And the Gemara says, if you make a bracha beforehand, how do you know to make a bracha afterwards? Says the Gemara, you make Kavah Chayma. If before he's learned, he makes a bracha, then Kavah Chayma, after he's learned, he should make a bracha. After he's finished learning, he should make a Birkas HaTeira. That's the two Gemaras. So ask the Vilna Gaon, why is it that when it comes to Birkas HaMozon, when it comes to eating, we make the Kavah Chayma that beforehand you should make the bracha? So it seems to be it's much more poshut that before you eat, it's much more obvious before you eat that you should make a bracha. Whereas when it comes to Birkas HaTorah, it's the other way around. We say, if you make a bracha beforehand, Kal v'chomer you make a bracha afterwards. So it's much more obvious that after you've eaten, after you've learned Torah, you should make the bracha. So what's this difference between Achila, Gashmias, eating, that you make the bracha beforehand, it's poshi you make the bracha beforehand, and when it comes to Torah, it's more obvious you make the bracha afterwards. Says Vilna Gaon, very gishmak, that when it comes to all other things, all Gashmias, the main hana, the main benefit is beforehand. Once you've finished a meal, I'm full, right? What do I want anymore? Right? You're happy to just walk away. Sometimes you feel a bit sick even. Tummy aches, who knows what? Right? So after you've finished, you've not got such a big hana from the food. But beforehand, you're so excited, you're hungry, right? They say never go shopping when you're hungry, right? Because you'll buy the whole shop. So you're hungry, you've got such a strong cheshek, you've got such a strong geschmack in the food. Obvious then you should make a bracha. You've got the food in front of you, it's obvious you should make a bracha. Because the cheshek is so strong before you eat the meal. But right, afterwards, you're not hungry anymore. You don't have so much enjoyment from the food. Then it's not so obvious you should make a bracha. That's why you have to bring a pasuk for afterwards. Whereas with Torah, says the Vilna Gaon, it's punkt faket. With Torah, before you learn Torah, it's hard. Coming to the base of Medrash, I've got to sit now for 3 hours or 4 hours, whatever it is, an hour, tired, hungry, whatever it might be. I've got to sit here to learn. It's difficult. Difficult. It's not so exciting, not so enticing. And that's why it's not so obvious you should make a bracha before you learn Torah. But after you've learned Torah, you've felt the geshmak of the Torah, and you've realized what there is there, then it's obvious you should make a bracha. Because now you've felt, with Torah, it's all the other way around to Gashmis. With Gashmis, all the hana, all the benefit is beforehand, because it's all just a bluff. You think you're going to get so much out of it, but afterwards, what is there? Whereas with Torah, it's the other way around. Beforehand, it's difficult, it's not easy. But afterwards, when you've done the learning, you've sat and you've horovit, then there comes the excitement, then comes the bracha, because the geshmak comes afterwards. There's a parasha later on in the Sedra of the Esnan Zayna and Mechir Kelev. This is a person who's got a sheep or an animal which wants to bring up for a korban, but this sheep has been exchanged. Either he's exchanged it as a schap or a zayna, so it's been used for not such a pleasant thing, or it's Mechir Kelev, which is he's had a dog, and he wants to sell his dog, so he swapped his dog for this animal, for this sheep, or this cow. He swapped it for a dog, so he swapped his dog for it, and now he's got this animal he wants to bring up as a korban. So as I tell you, these animals can't be brought up as korbanos, apostle, la'akrova, lo'isovi esnan zeino, u'mechir kelev beis Hashem l'gecha. He can't bring them as a korban up on the mizbeach. And the chinuch in the Shroshei HaMitzvah explains what's so bad about a person bringing up these two types of korbanos. So let's just go on the last one. The case of Mechir Kelev, where he swapped a dog for a sheep. And says the chinuch, that a korban bo letah machshava es ha'adam, a korban is coming to be metahed, to purify the person's thoughts, or lehachshim ha'seil, and in order to make his actions kosher, they should be correct in the eyes of Hashem. And since the korban is coming to correct things and to make him pure, to purify his mind and to purify his actions, shema yachshei be'ez korbonoi be'ezah inyin rao, at the time he's bringing the korban up, he might think about this thing which he's offering up, this sheep. He might think about this sheep, and he'll remember that this sheep either came from a zayna or this sheep came in exchange for a dog. And he says that dogs, the Gemara says, haklovim yidua shein azi nefesh, it's known that dogs are stubborn. And I think it's from the pasuk in Yeshaya, the dogs were stubborn there. V'shema mitei chofshu behen, at the time that he's thinking about this korban, and then thinking about the dog, uvetivan echozok, and also about the nature of dogs, how they're so stubborn, techozek nafshoi, he's going to harden his heart, v'tikshe orpei mehanochim al chatov, he's going to be so stubborn that he's not going to do a proper teshuva, kasha roile, like he should be doing. Right? So he's going to be, as he's bringing up his korban for whichever aveir he did, he might think of the dog, and dogs are stubborn. That might make a hashpa on him. It might affect him to become stubborn himself, just for those few seconds or for that time. And he won't have the right kavonas when he's bringing up the korban, and therefore he won't be machnia himself. He won't humble himself in front of the Rabbeinu Shleilom and bring up the korban in the correct way. Therefore, that's why the Torah says the chinuch. That's why the Torah forbids bringing up mechir kelev and esnan. So you can see from here how a person can be so affected by things which he sees, even subconsciously. He doesn't even think about it. He might not even think that he's thinking about how stubborn a dog is. But no, but he's got that animal there which came from a dog. That might make an effect on him. They won't do a proper teshuva, right? Obviously, it'll be very subconsciously. He won't be internalizing what he's thinking, but that will still make an effect of it on him. And he won't bring up the korban with the correct machshavas, and the korban won't be good enough from here. So we see from here how a person is so can be so affected and so taken in by things which he sees. How they can change him and make a big effect on him. I once heard that, I think going back some years, there was a type of advertising which has become outlawed. I think it was Coca-Cola used to put on the, in the middle of a film, they used to do a, I don't remember what it's called, they used to do a commercial where basically the person didn't even realize he'd seen Coca-Cola, so it probably just like a flash of a Coca-Cola can in the middle of the film, and no one actually realized they saw it, but after the film, everyone would go out and buy Coca-Cola, right? They outlawed it because it was obviously monopolizing the market, etc. But we see how a person can be affected by something which he sees, even though he doesn't even realize he's seen it. It can make such an effect on the person. The Torah puts the parasha of Nozir and Soita together in Parashas Nozir, and it says, why does the Torah put Nozir after the parasha of Soita? It says the famous Gemara, Horeya Soita b'kulkulah, sees a Soita who's being blown up, seeing what's happening to her, then he should be Yazir Atzmai min Ayayin, he should separate himself from wine, he shouldn't drink wine, because wine is something which brings the person to Averis. And the question is, someone who's seen what happened to a Soita, he's seen how she did an Avera and she got punished straight away, and she got such a terrible punishment, then obviously he's not going to do Averas. Why is it so important for him to separate himself from Yayin? He's had enough of a Musa Drosha. By seeing a blow up, that should be enough of a Musa Drosha. And the Mefarshim explained that no, even though he's had that Musa Drosha, but once he's seen what she's done, and he's spoken about it, and he's thought about it, everyone's talking about it, then just the talking about it, and just the seeing what's going on, could still make an effect on him to go bad, and to do the same thing himself, or to do similar things. But if he's got to act on it, he's got to be mazeh atzmei min hayayin, he's got to separate himself from wine, because he might be affected from the thing which he saw, even though it was a terrible punishment which he got. And later on in the Sedra, you've got the mitzvah of leisolin nivlosei aloetz, which is referring to a person who was mekalel Hashem, a person, the terrible aveira, mekalel Hashem, he gave a curse. Such a person has to be stoned, and then says they have to hang him up for a day. Leisolin nivlosei aloetz, but it says you shouldn't leave him on the tree overnight. Leisolin nivlosei, and if you do, it's an aveira. It's one of the leisa says. Says the apostle, ki kilnas elokim tolui, because he's hanging on the tree, and he's a person who cursed Hashem. He shouldn't be on the tree. Why should he not be so? Why do you want to show? Why don't we leave him there for good? Show everyone what he did and what punishment he gets. Right? He got skila and he got hung up. Why don't we want to leave him on the tree overnight? And we can say the same thing, that once people see him on the tree, they start talking about him. What did that fellow do? What did he do? How did he do it? When did he do it? Where was he? Who did he do it with? Right? So once people start talking about it, then it becomes natural to them, and then it can make an effect on them. So we don't want to leave him there too long, just a few minutes, just in order that people should be scared. But not longer than that, because you don't want it to be a normal sight. And then people start thinking about it, and they start thinking about doing the same thing themselves. So we see from here how when a person sees something, it makes a big effect on him. Come into contact with someone, with something, places, etc., etc., even just for a few seconds, even unintentionally, but that can change a person very much. There's a story, I think it was the Chofetz Chaim. There was a Meshulach who came collecting for Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He was going around Europe. And he, if it was a Chofetz Chaim, obviously he came to Radin, and he complained to the Chofetz Chaim that he's been around so much, he spent months or weeks collecting, and he's got barely any money. And at the same time, there's another Meshulach who came with him, who was going for not a good cause, some Tzionisha cause or something, and he made his money in a few days. Made thousands or billions, whatever it was. He's already gone back after a few days, and I'm here still going around for yeshiva, for a good cause. Why is it that I have to struggle, and he gets off so easily? He just gets a few days. He gets to go back with bags full of money. Instead of the Chofetz Chaim, I'll tell you why. There's two cases in the Torah where people had to run. or people had to keep moving. Right, one is the Ori Miklot, a person who killed Beshoigek, he killed by mistake, he has to go to Ori Miklot. And the Gemara says that they used to put up signs. Miklot, they used to write Miklot on the sides of the road, that the person should know where to go. There are other people who were good, Oile Rugolim, the people who used to go to the Beis HaMikdash for Yom Tov. And they said they would have to ask directions. They didn't have signs for them, they'd have to ask directions. So Chofetz Chaim said to him, what's the difference? Why didn't they put up signs? Beis HaMikdash, that way, whichever way it was. Why did they not put up signs like they did for the Ori Miklot? Why should they have to ask? And why should the guy going to Ori Miklot? He can just... So, okay, you could answer Poshet that the person who's going to Ori Miklot, he's in a big rush. Right? But said the Chofetz Chaim, I'll tell you why. The person who's going to Ori Miklot, even though he killed Beshoige, he killed by mistake, it's not... You know, it's not the biggest of it. It's not b'mezid. But Lemaisa, he's obviously some reason why he's done that. And we don't want people to speak to him. We want to keep him away from people. Because he could have an ashpoch, chas v'shalom, on people. We want him to get to the Ori Miklot as quickly as possible without coming into contact with people. Therefore, we write Miklot on the sides of the road. Get in there as quickly as possible. Whereas the person who's going to Eile Regolim, we want other people to learn from him. He's going to do a tremendous mitzvah. Kabbalah's Pnei Ashkenah, the Yom Tov. So we want other people to learn from him. We want people to speak to him. Where are you going? Ah, the Beis HaMikdash. Ah, I'll come with you, right? So we want other people to come in contact with him. Therefore, we want him to speak. We don't want to put up signs. We want him to be in touch with other people. Said the Chofetz Chaim to the Mashulach, that's the difference between you and him. Hashem saw this Mashulach coming. He's coming for a cause which is not good. I don't know what it was. He's coming for not a good cause. We don't want him to come in contact with people. So Hashem arranged, he'll speak to one or two people, two or three Gevirim, who are willing to give him massive amounts of money and go back to Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't have to speak to too many people. Whereas this fellow who's come for a yeshiva, you come for a mitzvah, we want as many people, Hashem wants as many people as possible to come into contact with you. So you'll get a few pennies here and a few pennies there, but at least you should come into contact with as many people as possible. That's why Hashem is making it so difficult for you. Carry on this job, be besimcha, that you're coming into contact with so many people and you can be mashpia on so many people. You see how important it is to stick to good things, to come in contact with good things, come in contact with people who are doing mitzvahs, with gedolim, with rabbonim, and how the effect it can happen, that can happen to a person when he doesn't come into contact with some people, with such people. And us ourselves, when we do mitzvahs, and we do good things, if we do it in public, let other people know, then they can learn from us. They can also do the same things, like the Briskerov would say, what's the difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur? Right, if you go to the Reform synagogues or the places where people don't come the rest of the year, suddenly it comes Yom Kippur, the place is swarming. You get these shuls, you get 5,000-6,000 people coming just for Yom Kippur, and a regular Shabbos, they just about get a minion. Why is it, asked the Biskarov, that Yom Kippur, everyone comes, everyone suddenly fasts, and they come to Daven, and they come for whatever it is, whereas Shabbos, they struggle. No one comes, no one's interested in keeping Shabbos. Why is it that Yom Kippur so much more makes much more effect on people than Shabbos? And he said, don't say it's because it's more strict, because Shabbos is skila, whereas Yom Kippur is only koros, right? So why is it that Yom Kippur is so much more more choshev to people who even are not frum? And said the Biskarov, that the difference is the way we keep Shabbos and the way we keep Yom Kippur. So it's Shabbos we have every week, so we get ready a few minutes before, a few hours before. We don't give it so much respect. That makes an effect on the whole world. And other people see us and they also don't give it as much respect as they would. Whereas Yom Kippur, we all prepare ourselves so well beforehand, for days beforehand or for weeks or for a month beforehand, we're preparing ourselves for Yom Kippur. We put so much seriousness to it, therefore that makes an effect on everyone else. And when we do our mitzvahs, if we keep Shabbos, we put more effort into keeping Shabbos, into doing things properly, and that will make the effect on other people. Just finish off with one more story. Okay, I might have said it before, I apologize if I have. We can see from this story also how the effect of a small thing can make on people. There's a Rosh Kodel in Rosh Hashiva in Ofakim called Rabbi Yosef Goldenthal. I'm not sure if he's still alive. But he did a lot of collecting in America, and he heard of a certain rich man who gave lots of money to yeshivas. And he decided he's going to go and visit this Gevir, get a donation from him for the yeshiva. And he made an appointment. He was given a time slot. And he spoke to the fellow. And the fellow gave him a nice, generous check. And Rabbi Yosef decided before he left, he's going to be a bit brave. And he asked the rich man, tell me, I hear that you give large amounts of money to yeshivas and to meister satira. What happened to you in your life? You know, what story was it that made you decide to give so much money to yeshivas? That's what he asked the rich man. The rich man thought for a few minutes. He said, yes, there was one thing which made me decide to give lots of money to yeshivas. So when I was a young boy, my mother took me to yeshiva somewhere in Europe, and I arrived, a young boy, one of the youngest boys in the yeshiva. I arrived there in the afternoon in this yeshiva. I traveled for a long time. I was very hungry and desperate for something to eat. And the way it worked, as you know, in the yeshivas in Europe, was they had the tog. They used to eat out at different families every day. They'd be told they'd have a gubba. The gubba would tell them exactly which family they're going to that day. So I'd be told which family to go to, but problem was I'd come too late for lunch. And it was, you know, still a few hours for supper. So therefore there was no meal for me to have at the time I arrived. And I went to the gubba and I begged the gubba, please, I'm starving, I've just travelled. And I can't wait till supper. And I burst out crying. And the gubba said, you know what? There's one family who I never send anyone to. Because they're really poor. They're extremely poor. But they often ask me to send someone. They really want to give food to a ben Torah. They really want to give food to a yeshiva boy. And I'll never send anyone because I feel too bad for them. They've got nothing, right? If you want, you can go there. They'll be happy to have you. Don't know what they'll give you. But, you know, he gave them the address. And I was so starving, I went to this house at the edge of the town, a little shack. And, you know, all sorts of smells coming out and noise from lots of children. And, you know, I got there. I wasn't sure. Should I go? You know, but then I was so hungry. I knocked on the door. Within a few seconds, a little boy opened the door to the house. And a massive smile appeared on his face. And he didn't say anything to me. He just ran into the house. And he said, Mummy, Mummy, there's a yeshiva bocha at the door. There's such a smile on his face, such excitement. Ran. Within a few seconds, the mother and all the other children came rushing to the door. Said, wow, yeshiva bocha, we've been waiting for someone. We want to give you a meal. Come inside, let's give you a meal. And all the children sat around the table. The mother had prepared some sort of meal, but they're very poor. And each child had already got his small plate with a little bit of food on. And there was nothing left for this issue. There was nothing left for me. So the mother said, before you start eating, children, I want you all to give a little bit of your food to the yeshiva bocha. Right? He learns Torah. Each of you should give a little bit of your food to the yeshiva. And each child gave meat, potato, whatever it was. Probably wasn't meat. But a little portion from each child, a potato, a carrot, peas, whatever it was, landed on his plate. And within a few seconds, he had a nice big plate of food, and he felt very bad to eat it, but he was hungry, and he ate the meal. As he was eating, each child was watching him, staring at him. He said, eat my potato now, eat my peas, eat my piece of fish. Right? They're all begging me to eat their food, because they were so excited to give their food to a ben Torah, to someone who sits Torah. They realized the schar, and they realized the importance of feeding a ben Torah. And therefore, after that story, not long later was the Holocaust, and as far as I know, this whole family was wiped out in the Holocaust. But I received from them such an chashivas to people who learn de Torah, to people who sit and learn Torah. I got that from them. And therefore, every time I give a check to yeshiva, I decided lechatchila I'm going to always give it le'ilu nishmosam. It should be as a zecha for this family who had such a respect for Torah. So we see how the chashivas and the seriousness which this family, the importance they gave to Limud Torah and to people who learn Torah and that they're willing to give their food away like that. That made such ashpah on this person that he supports so many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael and around the whole world. For those few seconds of ashpah which he got from them made such a big impact on this person. So Bezat Hashem, we should always realize that many things in life are only a cheshek, they're only just a big bluff. And the main thing is something which is thought through. A chafetz, if he realizes what exactly he's getting, many times a person will throw out many, many desires which he gets, and he'll just keep to the main things in life. That's one thing we learn from the Yetzirah. And the other thing we learned is that a person, by just being in contact with things which shouldn't be in just for a few seconds, can make such an ashpah on him. And the other way around as well, Be'ez Hashem, a person comes into contact with good things, with people who are doing mitzvahs, and with tzaddikim, that can make an ashpah on him, and he can make an effect on other people. Which others? Hey.